Hey, before we get started with this week's episode, I just want to give you a quick announcement. This is Deidre, and I am here to tell you that we have something brand new and exciting. And in case you haven't heard, I'm going to let Megan share with you how you can join our Patreon community and why you should.
Yeah, we just started our Dauntless Grace community, and it's through Patreon. And by joining us, you are working with us to support our mission. You can access exclusive content like behind the scenes videos that, are just mine and Deidre's faces with some special guests, plus bonus content from a lot of our really, really special guests. You can join a vibrant community and enjoy special perks like retreat discount pricing. So head on over to dauntlessgrace.org/community to find out more.
And there's more than just that. So if you didn't hear, you should go check out that link that she is telling you about because we also have monthly coffee and chat calls where we talk Enneagram. And for the next level up, quarterly co group calls with therapists. So I'm telling you, this is a really cool community to be part of, and you don't want to miss this opportunity.
Dauntlessgrace.org/community.
Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Megan. And today we have on our podcast Melissa Melton Otunba. I'm going to read her official bio, talk about how we met her, and turn it over to Melissa. So Melissa is a Midwest girl at heart, transplanted into the Dallas-Fort Worth area for the past 20 years. She is active in doing her own work to become who she was created to be. Melissa is an Enneagram 2 who loves this current season of her life as an empty nester. She has raised three amazing young adults who are creating their own identities. Melissa is the owner of FaithWorks Counseling and Consulting Services, where her passion is to empower women to remove limiting beliefs in all areas of their life and uncover who they truly are so they can enjoy the fruits of just being and living on purpose. When Melissa is not teaching and equipping women, she loves to laugh and can be found reading all things metaphysics brain related. Okay, we're coming back to that. Working out with her E2M online community, taking long meditative walks, eating out, binging YouTube, and spending quality time with her partner, children, friends, two fur babies, and dreaming about the future. So Melissa, we first came across you because you actually, well, you're a friend of a friend, and you came to our retreat last fall and we got to spend a weekend with you. And we were so enchanted by who you are that we thought we need to have her back on our podcast. So welcome, Melissa.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. This is exciting. I've never done this before. So thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. And yeah, that a good friend of mine, actually, Adrian, that I've worked with or used to work with for years, invited me to the to the retreat. And let me just tell you, it was life transforming for me. So I really thank you for what y'all do. Yeah, it was huge.
Not to toot our own horn, but can you say more about that, please?
Well, I don't mind tooting people's horns, by the way, but yes, and I don't say that very lightly because I go to things all the time. I love trainings. I'm like a training retreat junkie. But yeah, I came with, like I said, my friend who's an Enneagram 7. And just really, I've over the last about 3 years, I've been on a huge kind of spiritual journey of my own because of some things that have happened. And this was just kind of part of that. And, she invited me, I don't know, maybe a month or so before and asked me if it was something that I wanted to go to. We'd never done anything like this before. We typically kind of like just go out to eat, hang out, do those kind of things, but had never spent this much time or gone on a retreat together. And she invited me and I thought, oh, this sounds fun. I love the Enneagram anyway and can talk about it all day long. And so I thought, oh, retreat where I can also learn. This sounds amazing. So yeah, just kind of partnering the Enneagram with kind of the family systems and understanding internal family systems that a little bit better was really helpful for me because I actually had a situation where on the final day, a lot of things were coming up that I'd never really recognized around my own family background and how it had been impacting me that really was just so deep that I had never really thought about it before. And really was just kind of in tears on at Sunday, at kind of recognizing that. And it's been kind of a great journey of uncovering that over the last several months since, coming back. So yeah, it was very helpful.
And now I'm so jealous because you're getting even more training on the intersection of Enneagram and IFS in a cohort you're in. And I'm like, I wish we could be there. That would be so
Yes.
cool.
I know. Yeah, I wish you could too.
It's in person though, right? In Dallas.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that it's funny. I went to another training with another friend of mine. I have read several things by Susan Stabile over the last couple of years as I've gotten more understanding around the Enneagram and have used it in a lot of the work that I do. Read several of her books and went to a couple trainings in Fort Worth that she held and ended up talking to her. She actually told me a little bit about a cohort that she has once a year. I knew nothing about it, and invited me to apply to that. And so long story short, I ended up applying to the cohort. And then at the interview process, her and Dr. Stoker, which is another person that she works with, Andy Stoker, and he really specializes in family systems. And so they actually invited me because I'm a therapist to do not just the Enneagram one, but the Enneagram also partnered with family systems because they thought, although it could help me personally in my own journey and work, but also vicariously help in the work that I do, you know, working with clients. So we just had our first meeting about a month ago. So we'll meet quarterly, and it was just so informative, and it's really helping me on my personal journey of recovery and healing personally. But yeah, it's been amazing. So just kind of another step, you know, started with y'all and some of the reading that I'm doing, and it was I'm learning a lot about family systems that I didn't really recognize.
I love that. I have to admit, like when we found out you were coming and we had,
yes.
I think two therapists that were going to be there. And I was like, why are they coming to our retreat? What would we have to offer? And it's just the power of the community and the transparency in a space where there's just, there's a cultivated vulnerability there. And cultivated sounds like it's contrived, but you know, like we cultivate space for the vulnerability. And I think that's just so unique to when people show up and they're willing to do that. It doesn't matter what the information or resources are. It's just like we're living it out with each other. And the group that came that weekend was very sweet in their willingness to engage. Like, not that we don't always have people willing, but sometimes there's some who want to hold back a little bit more or other. And there was just something really powerful about that particular group that came together that weekend. And so I'm glad that you could be part of that. It taught us a lot to have your presence in that space too. So thank you for what you brought to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, and even you saying that, I think that's a common thought that even I as a therapist sometimes have, like when certain people come to me, well, what in the world do I have? You know, this person is older or has more experience or has more wisdom in this particular area. And I find myself thinking the same thing until I, you know, kind of start working and I realize, oh, okay, yeah, this is exactly why they're coming. Right? Because I see that, and that's exactly what happened that weekend. I feel like you know, so a little bit about, you know, this is where I kind of interweave the Enneagram. So as a 2-wing 1 said, you know, it can, you know, as we all know, it can be really beautiful, but also can be very deadly pairing, I say, because I have my pride as 2, you know, I have the sin of pride paired with the perfection of the 1, which in some ways can be very deadly for me. And I can come up against a brick wall sometimes with those two pairings. But coming to this, really, that weekend really helped me because for me personally, you know, as a helper, we like to be the one in control that helps somebody else. So in this situation, like all of that really kind of was able to be shed in allowing myself to be the one that was learning and that was in the kind of, I don't know, like 1-down position, I would say, where I, you know, was learning and growing and allowed myself to be able to be vulnerable so that I could feel some of the things that were coming up through the process that we were talking about, you know, that weekend. So it was really actually very helpful for me to not be in the normal position that I find myself in my personality.
Yeah. And that's interesting that you say that because someone else that was there that weekend, had not shared yet as we've gone kind of around the room. And it's very much like we're not going to force people, you know? So I remember in that moment thinking, should I push and ask specifically if she would like to share? But then I thought, oh, she's a 9. I don't know if I want to put her in that position if she doesn't want to. And what we found out when I did, what she was actually able to say is because she's always been a leader in the church, like in some capacity or other, those situations would often bypass her and no one asked her what she needed. And the hesitancy in me was, well, if she wanted to share, she would. I don't want to like make her feel like she's backed into a corner or pressured, you know? So I think that that's such an interesting thing that we tend to get in our own way sometimes with all the gymnastics we're doing in our head about should I, shouldn't I, should I speak up? Am I the one leading this? Should I step back? Maybe that's just me as a one, but I get in the way of that sometimes. So.
No, it's definitely not just you at all. Because normally I would hold back also in those situations, probably for different reasons, potentially a nine would. But I think me sharing, and actually I know I wasn't the first. I think there was three or four other women that shared before me. And I knew that I had to share because each one of the women that shared like really resonated. I almost felt like these were, you know, kind of, I didn't know a lot about internal family systems up until that point. But I felt like this was, you know, the different parts of me that was being expressed through these other women's stories that were so identical to things that I had gone through in my own situation, from, you know, going through divorce, from being, you know, a child of a single parent, to just these different things that each one of them, like the people that went before me, almost like they were sharing my story, but in another person. It was crazy. So then I knew, okay, well, let me share what, you know, obviously resonated with me. And so, yeah, it was really powerful just to see that. I feel like it was such a good reflection that we all really have very similar experiences, but oftentimes we don't share them. And that's why we feel so, you know, individual, or like, oh, nobody would ever understand my story. I'm so different. Mine is so much, you know, different that I wouldn't be able to identify, or they wouldn't be able to identify with me, when the truth is, I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
So.
That's, you know, the reason we started Dauntless Grace in the first place. It started as an kind of an online ministry and an online blog. And it's because as we started sharing our stories in a Facebook group that Adrienne was in, actually your friend. We realized, oh, me too. I identify with this. I have a similar story. I have the same struggle. And it relieves some of that shame to know this, oh, I'm not the only one. And so that's really the heart of why we do what we do, is to kind of go, we're not isolated in this. We're not alone in this. And when we come together and create the space to let Jesus meet us in those spaces, then there's really powerful transformation that can happen.
So true. So true. And to realize how much more connected that we are, you know, than we realize. I mean, like, I think I have the beautiful opportunity every day to see that in the work that I do, you know, coaching and teaching women through my practice. But, you know, because they oftentimes reflect something back to me. You know, I oftentimes say I've been now a counselor for, this will be my 16th year. And it's funny, in the beginning, I really thought it was for the purpose of, you know, helping other people. and the longer I do this, the more I see this is really just a reflection of me. You know, because the more I change, I notice the change in a lot of the clients that I'm seeing. And I'm learning so much from them that I never would if I weren't, you know, wasn't listening to their stories and seeing them, you know, them sharing and being vulnerable and authentic with some of the things that they're experiencing. So, you know, I oftentimes say and kind of joke around with my clients, I say, I hope you're getting something out of this, because I sure know that I am. So.
Well, and I'm really intrigued how you utilize Enneagram in your therapy. I don't know, at least when I've looked in our area for therapists who might understand the Enneagram, it just seems like, oh, that's not a thing we do in therapy. And I'm like, but it's so helpful to understand someone and to understand even the dynamics of a family that different types and, you know, what that energy might look like.
Yeah, absolutely. So, kind of funny story. I knew nothing about it like 5 years ago. I was working at a group practice at the time in Fort Worth, not too far from a college. And a lot of the college students were actually calling, asking if there was any Enneagram informed counselors. And all of us were like, what does that even mean? Like, I have no clue what that even means, you know? So I love to research and learning. And so I started just kind of doing some of my own research, ended up reading some books and then going to some trainings and really kind of just falling in love with it. Number one, as a tool to understand myself. When I read, you know, when I read my own personality, I just felt so seen the first time in my life. Like, wow, there's more of me out there. This like is so interesting, right? And it really helped me to understand myself better. And so I ended up going to several trainings, reading pretty much any book and podcast that I could get my hands on to understand it better. And then started actually using it with clients probably about 4 years ago, where it's part of my assessment process. Where, you know, in the intake process, I will, you know, give an assessment, we'll talk about it, and really see how that aligns with the client, let them know I really use it, you know, really vicariously for two reasons. Number one, to create, again, self-awareness for that person. Oftentimes we don't realize, you know, we just have these patterns in our lives that we do, and we don't even understand where they're coming from, why we're doing them, what they're motivated by. And so it's, you know, it's really helpful for number one, the client to understand their own motivations, to understand their own patterns and how that links back to their childhood story. And then how it might be showing up currently, which is usually the reason what's bringing them into counseling in the first place. So number one, just for their own growth and self-awareness, but then vicariously for me, obviously as the counselor, to be able to understand their personality a little bit quicker, because I would say to people how I talk to say a four, like Megan, is very differently than how I might speak to an eight, right? It's just like how I frame, because we have different communication styles. Yeah. And I'm learning that more through the work with Suzanne Stabile, that how we speak even in our personalities is very different. So I never want to assume, you know, that we all are going to speak and learn and process the same way, because if I do, I'll probably only be successful for a very small set of my clients. So understanding their personalities more quickly really helps me to build that connection on a deeper level, a little bit quicker, and help them to communicate some of the tools that we talk about or learn in a way that they can really receive and then do something with, you know, as they choose. So yeah, I just, it's been so helpful because a lot of clients feel a lot more connected quickly when I understand their personality. So it's been such a very transformative tool.
Yeah. I mean, that was going to be my question, was how has it transformed your practice? But, you know, it sounds like you're kind of confirming mm-hmm. what we thought as non-clinical therapists, which mm-hmm. is, you know, you can spend weeks and weeks and weeks on a therapist couch and them mm-hmm. trying to uncover some of those deeper motivations and yeah. core fears and core longings that we're not always aware of. And the Enneagram mm-hmm. gives us almost a shortcut to it. Yeah. And I don't say that lightly. Like, I know the Enneagram takes a lot of work mm-hmm. to understand, especially all the nuance of it, but yeah. it kind of lets someone else get there a little bit faster with you when that is the common language, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And I always like to, because I think it's so important to understand, because a lot of times people think, well, I don't want to be put in a box. Right? Like a lot of people, like I have had a couple clients say that. And of course, if they don't want to, you know, I honor that as well. But I don't remember who would, you might remember where this quote comes from better than I do, but I
Ian Cron.
Yes. it doesn't put you in a box. It helps you to see the box you've already put yourself in. Yes. Right. And so really, because the beauty of it is that, you know, we are all of them, right? We can really pull from all of the beautiful characteristics of any of the numbers at different times as appropriate, but we have kind of some streamline ourselves in one box. And so I never want to use it as a way to say, well, I'm just a two, so this is how I do things and I'll always do things that way, because that keeps me in the box, as opposed to no, I can use some of these other skills and tools and behaviors of all the numbers, really, you know,
yeah,
where most appropriate. So I'm not putting myself in a box any longer.
Yeah, that's good. You said initially what led you there was people requesting it, but how it's also helped you on your journey. And one of the things as we've been talking to other clinicians and leaders is mm-hmm. how, at what point maybe was it that you began your own healing journey, or why is it so important that you continue to do your work, you know, as yourself? What does that look mm-hmm. like?
Yeah. Well, for me, I actually, this is probably my pride speaking. I always thought I was doing my work. Really? I was, you know, because I, you know, I come from a family that on both sides, I have addiction on my family. And on my mom's side, there's a lot of alcohol addiction. On my dad's side, there's been drug addiction. And so part of the reason why I became a counselor is because I wanted to understand human behavior better and probably work through some of the personal things or how addiction affected me in my own life and my relationship with family members. And so I thought I was actually always doing that. And on some level, I'm sure I was. Absolutely. Sure. But really the biggest thing for me was things in my own family. You know, I have three children and had a situation with my son that he stopped talking to me. And I had to go through a healing journey, whether I liked it or not. And I really thought it was the most devastating thing ever. Until I ended up realizing now doing work, it really forced me into doing a lot of personal work that I hadn't up until that point, that I needed help. I got a counselor, I got a coach, and started doing a lot of different therapies that I'd never done before to understand what was happening and why he was pushing back. And now I can see where actually what I thought was just this horrible thing now has become just this most beautiful blessing in my life, because my whole life literally has been turned upside down in a beautiful way. And but it took a really huge wake-up call. And as an Enneagram 2, as you probably can imagine, you know, my biggest motivation is relationships. And I am a one-on-one, or what they call a, you know, sexual instinct too. So those personal relationships are number one, just our huge motivation. So to have one of your children not speak to you, it's like devastating. But God had to use something so powerful like that to really wake me up, to be able to understand some of the things that I wasn't seeing in myself, so that I could get, you know, my pride had to be lowered and I had to be humbled to reach out for help and start my own journey, which I had several just amazing things, Enneagram being one of them, that really came in at a perfect time to help me to grow in a lot of different ways that now I'm seeing the fruits of, and my whole life is completely different than it was literally just 4 years ago. I can't even say.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Man. Yeah. That's powerful, because I think when we come to those situations in life, we're kind of at a crossroad where, like, okay, then I'm going to double down on whatever the strategy is I've been using, and I'm going to fix this. I'm going to power through, you know, or I have an opportunity to, and that's actually why we call our Dauntless Grace. Like, it's scary to walk into a new story. Even if we recognize that there's a dysfunction of the old story, we have to get so uncomfortable with that to pursue the healing of the unknown story, you know? And I think so many people listening, I know in my life, there was like that kind of situation in my life where it was like, I was kicked out of the nest because I wasn't going to leave on my own to go find anything, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not that God orders like these horrible things to happen in our life, but I think that we have an opportunity when they do to kind of reorder how we're going to move forward. And it just is so cool that you pursue the healing that you needed.
Oh yeah. Like I now know the actual meaning of several scriptures that in the past I would just read and say, oh, that sounds nice. That's cute. Right. Like one of them being that God uses all things for our good and his glory, all things, you know, oh, well, what does that mean? Well, now I can see, I just judge certain things as not good. I don't like that. I don't ever want that to happen to me. Right? Like I never would want my child not to talk to me for any reason. But now I can see how he had to use something that extreme for my good. Right? Because as a result, I'm a different person, spiritually, emotionally, health-wise. Like I started a business during this time. I let go of old relationships that didn't work and created a lot of new ones. And just my whole mindset has literally been changed, that I can see now how that was used for my good. And the other one is that God will give you the peace that surpasses all understanding. The first year that this happened, I had anxiety all the time. I felt like I was struggling with PTSD, and I couldn't sleep. It was a very difficult year for me. And I had a lot of several people that walked alongside me. But the second year, had really like switched it, and I had such peace. I just knew everything was going to work out well in all areas. And it has. Like, he's changed me. My son and I are building a much healthier relationship than ever before. And actually, we're talking regularly and just in a different way. And I've just seen his maturity. And I think God had to use him really to grow me up, which is the opposite of what I would have ever thought, you know, and how I was raised as far as, you know, as parents, our job is to teach and train our children and, you know, do all the things. But now I can see how actually God has used my children, all three of them, but, you know, his was the most dramatic, let's say, really to grow me up as a person and to wake me up to understand some principles that I really just didn't understand until all this. And so now me and my son are really kind of pursuing a much healthier relationship and learning from each other in a different way.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Sorry, Megan, I thought you had a question.
No, sorry. I'm like stuck in the story. Like, okay. Yeah. Like that's hard. And you didn't waste the crisis point. That's what we call it. When you don't waste the crisis point.
Yeah.
Deidre used to teach our conferences with a story kind of metaphor. Okay. Like we'd come to a crisis point, like where we could have had to make a decision. The conflict is introduced and you can either go through the obstacles to get to the top and choose a new story, or we can go back to the beginning and start over and just stay in this loop that cycles through and through. And you didn't waste the crisis point. And I love that that's kind of a real life analogy that played out for you, you know, and it's, we say it in theory a lot, but it's nice to hear someone live it.
Yeah. In practicality. Yeah. Cause I have, and I can see now how in the past I had been playing, like, I believe me, I've had years of looping, years of looping. And so I think this was just, that opportunity where I couldn't, right. Like I was like at that crossroads where it's like, you know what this road looks like. You've been down here. And for, like I said, a two wing one, it's just to control more, to try and control and double down even more on my relationships. And, as opposed to really the idea of letting go, letting go and releasing and allowing, and understanding that, you know, love is very important to, you know, relationships and Enneagram too. But the way I learned love was growing up was actually very different than what I realize it is now. You know, and learning to let go and honor somebody's not wanting to be in a relationship with you is love, right? Like me respecting my son's decision not to speak with me, not to interact with me, that he needed to do his own thing. He needed to grow up in his own way. And I needed to honor that. And that's actually what love looked like, honoring his not wanting a relationship with me until, or if he ever chose to. So that was huge for me, but that was the different road that I had to go down and really focus on myself, which I had never done up until that point. As a two, we like to help others and kind of be in other people's lives, but it's much harder for us to pivot and really make that focus ourselves in our own healing and journey. And so that's really how God turn my life upside down so that I could make that the focus and the lens by which now, you know, I can help out of in a much different way than I ever did before.
And you work with women to break these cycles in their lives, whatever the cycle is. What do you see as the thing that is the catalyst for that in their lives?
Yeah, I think
maybe that's too big of a question. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think similar. I mean, the patterns might look a little bit different in all of our lives, obviously, you know, because we have different stories. But I think, in a similar way, I think a lot of the things that we're taught about ourselves and about love is really the opposite of what is truth. You know, like I think many of us as women, you know, learn that love is sacrificing ourselves, not loving ourselves, not taking care of ourselves or making ourselves, our relationship with the Lord, a priority, but rather putting all that on the back burner and like, okay, let me take care of, you know, my parents, my partner, my children, you know, let me be the biggest and the best at my job and my career, whatever it is that we, you know, we do professionally. And we're kind of in the background, you know, and really learning that love is making myself a priority. right? Like even scripture says, you know, Jesus says that we're to love the Lord their God with all our hearts, but then to love our neighbors as ourselves. But many of us as Christian women, I think, kind of push away that as ourselves, like we forget that, you know, but really loving ourselves is loving other people, because if I fully love myself and take care of myself, mind, body, and spirit, now I can pour out of a cup that's so much different. Now I'm authentically giving to you and I don't have any strings attached. But if I don't, I'm giving out of that energy of, well, yeah, I'm going to do this for you, but what are you going to do for me? Eventually you're going to take care of me, or you're going to do something back, which is not love at all. So it's definitely seeing that pattern, helping people to identify how that shows up in their lives so that they can make themselves a priority, and then see how that shows up so that they can kind of really change that dynamic of making themselves a priority. Because when you do, now you can, you know, serve or give or, you know, in such a different capacity than you can when you're not. Hopefully that answered that.
Yeah, I feel like I just started a counseling session. My eyes are filling up with tears while you're speaking. It's been a week. It's been a week around here, Melissa. Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah, absolutely.
I so agree with you. And I think that one of the things that we sometimes will hit up against with some Christian women is like self-care and looking and doing all this, you know, self stuff is kind of like selfish, basically a selfish way to live to be giving. And I think as you said, it is a part of fulfilling the Great Commandment. Otherwise we are giving out of a desperate need to get from the things we're doing. And we're driven by that, you know, in internal family systems, it's the difference between a manager who's burdened because an exile is being protected versus, you know, the exile has found some healing, has had an unburdened belief, and the managers are now, these protectors don't have to protect. They really are just managing our world. But when we're driven to self-protect, whatever that is, like it's a two, it was a more relational, you know, attending to needs of others, but like all Enneagram types have some kind of need there that as they do the thing they're doing, they're unhealed. It's driven from a place of or the empty cup, as you said. And so it's so important to do this work. We can wait until we hit the crisis point, or we can just ask the Lord and invite him into the spaces where we're like, people keep saying this to me. I need to do the work. What does that mean? You know, Holy Spirit, like, come alongside me and show me, what does that mean? And the grace for it when we finally hit the wall, I don't know, but it's very encouraging to hear you.
No, I hear that word a lot, selfish, right? And I, again, I've learned to kind of turn that upside down. I think it's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
It's selfish not to take care of yourself. Because then when we do, like you said, with those protector parts, now I'm expecting my mother to take care of me, my boss to take care of me, my husband to take care of me, just because I'm not. But when I'm taking care of myself, now I can support other people so differently than otherwise. So yeah, it's definitely been a game changer kind of understanding that and helping, you're right, I think in Christian women specifically, to kind of maybe redefine what that means, you know, selfish, and just see really that it's the most loving thing that you can do. One of my favorite quotes right now, and I want to make sure I explain it because it can be misinterpreted and sound bad, but I hope it doesn't, is, I love you so much that I no longer care what you think, and I no longer hold you responsible for how I feel. And it sounds harsh initially. I don't care what you think, but it's like in a respectful way, right? Like, I allow you to think whatever you think about me. That's fine. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to align with me. You don't have to think I'm the most amazing person, whatever. Because I no longer hold you responsible for how I feel. Because I think we're taught oftentimes, especially as women, that, you know, I need you to think a certain way about me in order for me to feel good about myself. But if I don't, it's like I'm cutting all those strings, right, of attachment. Now, you know, you can think I'm a terrible mother. You can think I'm not the best counselor. You can think my hair looks ridiculous, but that's fine. I still love you. And I still feel the way I'm going to feel about myself. To me, that's like the ultimate. And I have to remind myself that daily when, of course, I get triggered, because I still do, you know, so that I can have healthier relationships with people also.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. On that note, it just reminded me, we've had episodes before where we talked about conflict. Deidre and I like talking about different conflict styles. Mm-hmm. And I used to engage in conflict with her to be like, wait, I upset you. I have to know that we're okay. And then all of a sudden I'm shifting the focus of what the thing is that we should be processing through to, I need to make sure that you and I are okay. And I'm, and in that I'm like, yeah, I'm making her responsible for how I'm feeling about this thing, instead of what she's trying to bring to the table is, let's talk about the thing now. And I was always shifting the focus. So that's what hit me just as you were saying that. Yeah. I know it probably hit Deidre in different ways, especially when you were like, I don't care what people think about my hair.
Yeah,
that's hilarious, because that's exactly what I thought of all the examples you just used. It was my hair. Like, I got in the car yesterday after a whole day of being with all these people at work, staff meeting and family lunch and with the women and grocery shopping, and I looked at myself, I was like, I cannot believe you've been walking around all day looking like this.
No.
That's funny. Well, I use that because, you know, I'm on my own like curly hair journey right now also, that I've learned for the first time in 35 years that I've been doing my curly hair wrong. And so, yeah, I'm learning the same thing. It's funny. Good example.
Oh, that's so good. Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate you joining us. How can our listeners just learn more about you and engage with you?
Well, a couple different ways. Definitely, you know, would love, you know, anybody's wanting coaching and support. I do both counseling, but also, Enneagram coaching now as well. I will be starting doing some coaching for businesses also. And they can find me, on LinkedIn under Melissa Melton Otumba. I'm also doing, a lot of teaching. I didn't share a lot about this. This is my other baby. So Enneagram is one that I just is so close to my heart, but the other one, is work called concept therapy, which is a lot of the principles that I use in my counseling practice that really help women to better understand themselves also a lot more quickly and use the power that they have, that God has given us, through our thoughts, through our emotions, to be able to live more effective lives. And so I also do that teaching. I'm right now in a cohort of teachers that are becoming certified to teach this theory to other helpers, you know, so that we can kind of get some of these principles out, so they can also find those teachings on concepttherapy.org. And also under my Facebook page, which is FaithWorks Counseling on Facebook. So those are kind of my main areas right now.
Okay,
awesome.
Well,
we'll make sure
to schedule another one for you to come back and talk about concept therapy. So
I know. Okay, yes, that's
a whole
other
can of worms you open for us.
Yes, I know. Yeah, and it's beautiful. Like, I'm seeing clients just like literally so quickly, you know.
Yeah, we learn a new tool about every 2 years and start incorporating it. So it sounds like this is the next one we need to figure out.
Oh, yeah. Love to have you. Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful work. And like I said, and the two work so beautifully together. A lot of the principles I'm working here, and then what I'm learning through the Enneagram, just like I said, it's all the same things. It's just looking at things through a different lens. And the more holistically we look at something, I feel like just the more quickly we can get understanding and apply whatever is needed.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll make sure we link for all of that in our show notes, okay, so people can find you just from here, from the Spotify page. So that will be there. Great. And yeah, thank you so much. That was a great conversation, and we just really enjoyed seeing you again and talking to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, ladies, for having me. This was so much fun, and I love the work that you all are doing. So thank you for inviting me.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.